I think, you know, our ability to love and be authentic with our group is so important, and being able to gauge the room and know that you might have planned really well, and you might have a video to show and a list of questions to talk through, and you might get stopped down the first one because that's where one or more than one in your group really need to stay.
Well, hey, welcome to Group Chat, a resource designed to encourage and equip Rush Creek group leaders to cultivate environments for people to encounter God and engage in biblical community. As we pursue becoming foreigners of the faith, unite help people find and follow Jesus. My name is Clayton, I'm your host, and this season we've been looking at how do we engage culture. In my conversation today with Stan and Gary, we turn that inward to the life of a leader. We talk about emotional health as a leader. Rich Viodas says emotional health is paying attention to your inner space and your outer pace. And so we look at the signs of emotional unhealthiness as leaders, and we also talk about best practices that we can put into our lives to become emotionally and spiritually healthy. Because we cannot be emotionally unhealthy and spiritually healthy. They go together. Just as loving God and loving others is inseparable. And so in this conversation, we look at those signs and practices. For all of our resources, though, you can go to rushcreek.org/groups. And I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did having it. Well, hello there. I'm Clayton. Today, I'm joined by Gary and Stan. And so why don't y'all take each a little bit of moments to tell me about who you are, what you do at Rush Creek, and one random fact about who you are.
Okay. My name is Gary Meinecke. I am the worship arts pastor here at Rush Creek Church, and I've been on staff here for 12 years. And a random fact about me is I currently have tennis elbow, but I've never played tennis.
That's a nice band that you have on your
You like that? Doesn't that look great?
There's a nice little black band right below the elbow.
Can we put a picture of this
yes,
in the podcast
notes? Yes, that will
be notes?
In the podcast notes. We'll have a picture of Gary's tennis elbow.
Nobody will see that. Well, I'm Stan Rogers, and I'm the group's pastor at the Arlington Park campus. Been with Rush Creek for almost 5 years. That's hard to believe, but it goes by quickly, but enjoying it. Fun fact about me, I love to fish. I love to eat fish. I love to watch people catch big fish. So I guess I'm a fisherman.
Like as entertainment? You like to watch other people fish?
Have you ever watched Bassmasters?
No, groupers, the big ones. The ones that are big as a whale.
Yeah, okay. I used to watch river monsters. That's why I never get in the lake or river anymore because it's scary.
Yeah.
What's out there? That scares me. Well, today we're joining into this conversation, really defining what emotional health is. Recently, I was reading that the APA, the American Psychological Association, said that 87% of adults have agreed that there's been this constant stream of crisis over the last 2 years. And more than 7 in 10, 73% said they're overwhelmed by the number of crises facing the world right now. And they keep going that 70% of parents fear the pandemic have negatively affected their children's social development, academic development, and emotional health development. And so there's a growing concern. And even for us in our life as leaders, we are walking through the exact same thing, and we have people in our communities who are doing the same thing. And where we go, our people will go.
Yeah.
And I think one of the primary responsibilities for me as a pastor and as a leader is to care for our inner life as well. And so we want to first thank y'all for joining me on this conversation of emotional health. And so what is emotional health? How would you define it for us?
Emotional health for me is it's definitely an intangible thing that is almost a, for me it's defined by my attitude. I think if I'm emotionally unhealthy, I have a poor attitude about even things I used to enjoy. And my relationships, the people that I'm closest to, the way I speak to them, the way I treat them, all to me kind of show me where I'm at with my emotional health.
That's good.
Yeah, it is an attitude. And some of the definitions that I was looking at just to kind of get a better understanding of what it really encapsulates, and it seems like it just comes down to this thought of our attitude towards how we think and feel. And so it's what's taking place in your mind, but it's also emotional health plays, you know, how we our emotions go and all that stuff. It just really plays into a good outlook, a bad outlook, or how we're dealing with the stresses in life.
Yeah. And Gary, I like what you said, that your relationships probably start to see it before you do.
Yeah.
Because we always think better of ourselves than we really are, but spouses and kids and friends, they can start to see that something is wrong.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a connection between how healthy we are emotionally and how healthy we are spiritually? Is there a connection there, or do you think those are two separate things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I would even say this, I don't want to hijack where you're going, but physically too, honestly. I think one of the ways that I can tell how I'm doing emotionally and spiritually is how clean my car is.
Yeah, because your outer world reflects your inner world most
really,
likely.
It really does, your outer spaces, your inner spaces. But yes, I think that the most logical reason for that to me is that when we're grounded spiritually, when we're in the Word, when we have a healthy prayer life, and then we have a healthier perspective of who we are and the world around us.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it affects so much, because it's almost like if you're off emotionally and in this idea, what seems to happen is it affects how you communicate, it affects what you want to do, your drive. You know, a lot of times if you're experiencing this, you're maybe feeling a lot more fatigue, or you're feeling just various emotions that make you want to shut down. So the engagement in the world around you, people become more and more at arm's length, which leads to more isolation, which, you know, perpetuates the problem.
Yeah, I like that, because you said the engagement with others, because Pete Scazzerzo, his whole ministry is about being emotionally and spiritually healthy, and he says you cannot be emotionally healthy, or cannot be emotionally healthy and spiritually healthy. They go together. Because I think sometimes we can be like, yeah, I'm really good with my relationship with God, but when you look at your relationships with other people, you can start to become more isolated. Mm-hmm. You can start to become more cold and callous and maybe short. And because there's something emotionally and mentally and relationally going on that is unhealthy, but we can say, well, look where I'm at with God. I'm in the Word, or I'm at church. But there's a disconnect of how that's being embodied and experienced.
Right.
And I think that might be how we define success, especially as a group leader, looking at our success as a group leader. What is a good definition of success that is both emotionally and spiritually healthy for us? Is it how many people are coming? Is it what's a good definition of success?
No, it ties into what you just said. You know, I when I talk to our group leaders, whether they're current, potential, whoever, really what I want them to do is lead out of an overflow of a relationship that's already there with Christ. So if they're in the Word, if they're praying, if they're engaging God, the overflow of that is how they lead their groups. And so it's connected in, it's not so much how many people. You can have a bunch of people in a group and it still not be growing and you not be happy, all that kind of stuff. But some of the most successful leaders that I have found, and it's almost the adage, if they know how much they love you and how much they how much you love them and the care that's in that group, it covers the multitude of sins or inaccuracies of this, that, or the other, even some personality traits. But a strong leader is one that has a connection with God, a great relationship with God, and it flows through them in their group time, whether it's discussions, whether it's prayer time, whether it's just engaging each other in various activities, social, or, you know, just as a biblical community.
Yeah, that's really good. I think all of that, plus I define a healthy leader, group leader, as someone who's not doing everything themselves. If you've got buy-in from the people in your group and ownership from people in your group, so that, you know, if you find yourself hosting and leading and providing food and planning every service activity, then you're gonna be unhealthy emotionally eventually.
Yeah.
You may lean into that at first, but long-term health requires, giving it away and getting your group involved in the leadership of the group.
Yeah, we're called to engage in biblical community. And as a leader, that means we have to get our people to engage and not just participate and just sit on the sidelines to, I like to say, bring something to the table, whether it's your, to exercise the gifts that God has given you to, as a leader, to say, hey, you have a heart for reaching those who are not yet here. I need you to keep that on our radar.
Yeah.
Because that will keep you healthy, kind of knowing where your gifts are and where your gaps are, and let people exercise their gifts there. But when we look at Scripture, how does Jesus define success for us? John 13:4-5, new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. So I think Jesus is definitely onto something about the connection between spiritual and emotional health.
Yeah.
As you're receiving love, as we talked about. And do you think when we're emotionally unhealthy, whether spiritually as well, our interactions with people, especially in groups, sometimes when it comes to maybe a perceived lack of growth, do you think that is more like a holding up a mirror to ourselves sometimes if we're getting frustrated with somebody else not growing or engaging God's word? Do you think that could be a mirror about our own emotional and spiritual health?
Yeah, I think it can, because, you know, we're talking about engagement and community and just the idea of what we're trying to accomplish. As I said a moment ago, if our group leaders are leading out of the overflow of their heart from their relationship with God, the things that we see, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, all these things come into play and what it looks like in group. And so you're also creating an environment that is inviting. Yeah. It's one that's authentic. We throw that word around where people can come and they can share things from what they're learning. They can share stuff from their life. They're not going to feel like people are judging them, but they're going to come alongside of them and pray with them. And so there's, as a leader, you're trying to create an environment that is welcoming, mess and all.
Yeah.
Because that's important too. We so often can just simply play the church game, and whether that's in someone's living room or here at one of our campuses at Rush Creek, we know how to say, we know how to look, we know how all the things we're supposed to do. But I love a good group that it does get messy with life stuff, and we engage each other, because what that does for me as a leader, it encourages me. And what I hope in modeling that kind of authenticity, I'm also seeing that take place in the lives of the other people that sit in the circle in our living room. So
that's good. Yeah, we in our group agreement, we say a heart that swells is a heart that tells, that we should bring everything to that group time.
And say that again, a heart that's well?
Is a heart that tells.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, because it's about honesty and authenticity.
Yeah.
Because sometimes as a leader, you can watch somebody walk in and you can just tell, because you said our outer world will sometimes tell if we're healthy or not. They just look like they're carrying something.
Yeah.
But as a leader, you can just be like, all right, let's just move on to our topic of conversation. Even though you probably clocked that there's something wrong, but because of just where you might be at, you might just move on and bypass what that person is doing, and when it's an opportunity for them to share the mess and maybe go off topic.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking right there. I think, you know, our ability to love and be authentic with our group is so important, and being able to gauge the room and know that you might have planned really well, and you might have a video to show and questions, a list of questions to talk through, and you might get stopped down the first one because that's where one or more than one in your group really need to stay.
Yeah.
And I don't dismiss our group till somebody's cried.
I think every time we do a Francis Chan study on Right Now Media, like the first episode, he's like, if you need to pause this and pray or take care of something in your group, don't go another like step forward in the study. Like, take care of what God is doing there.
Yeah.
And that's a good sign of like somebody who's emotionally healthy, aware of both that loving God and loving people are inseparable.
Yeah.
Because when you have that stance, as you have that overflow, that intimacy, you're aware of what God is doing in your life.
Right.
So you can step into other people's stories and be like, hey, how do we need to step in?
And I think that's so important, because our Sunday mornings, like our gathering when we all come together, is so programmed and planned, you know, as it should be. There's room. But somebody's going to either hear something from the Holy Spirit in a song or during the message, but there's no time to process it right there. And so that's really what makes a group different, is you have time to stop and process and walk through stuff together. So,
yeah, you got to be friends of those awkward silences and let people process. And as a leader, just be in prayer in that moment.
Right.
But when we think about emotional health, there's definitely some signs that you may be emotionally unhealthy. Like you said, your car, how you carry your body, how your body's feeling. What are some signs that we can just be aware at that we're emotionally unhealthy as a leader, as a follower of Jesus?
I think for me personally, my attitude or my reaction to when we're going to meet, like there's just real transparent. There's times when group's gotten canceled, and I'm like, oh, yes, good. Or, yeah. And I know in that point, I know that that means that I probably need to reset a little bit emotionally and make sure that I'm grounded and leading from a healthy place. Because not that you're just always going to be super excited and ready to go every time, but there should be a little bit of that. You should be excited to lead your group and to lean into that. So that's a sign for me that there's physical signs too. I was sharing with you guys before we got started. When I was in my mid-20s, we just had our first baby, had our daughter Amelia, and I'd just been promoted at work, and there's just a lot going on. We had just sold our house and moved in with my in-laws. There's just so much going on. And I found myself coming home from work every day and just wanting to go to bed.
Yeah.
And physically having flu-like symptoms, like feeling feverish and all those things. And Shannon told me she should go to the doctor, let's get it figured out. Mm. And he told me, hey, you're having panic attacks. And I said, no, it's impossible. I'm a real chill guy. And, you know, in every other sense I was, and I am just very relaxed, and I don't worry about a lot of stuff. But he was right. In that moment, I had so much going on that even subconsciously, I was so unhealthy emotionally that I was having panic attacks. And and his advice for me, now this isn't the right advice for everybody, let me be clear, but for me, it was very clear. He said, hey, you just need to chill. He's like, stop worrying. And that struck a chord with me. And it kind of made me go back and get more grounded spiritually.
Yeah,
I dug into the word more, and I prayed more, and started getting healthier spiritually, and that led to being healthy emotionally.
No, that's good.
Yeah,
it shows up in a number of ways. Obviously, in the body we're talking about, I know for me, when I feel like I'm stretched thin and going through a cycle, you know, I will close my eyes, and my eyes are still kind of dancing around as if I just can't shut it off.
Yeah.
But also, you know, when you think about just even the in and out of the day, I become very reactive in how I'm living. And what that means to me is it's like there's this long list of things that I'm engaging in and people I'm engaging in, conversations I'm having, problems I'm solving, however you want to define it. And it's one right after another. And so what happens is, I was even thinking about this on my way over here, is that it's a little part of a poem that I learned years and years ago, and I've kind of changed it a little bit. But it's it starts off, you know, I woke up early this morning, and rushed right into the day. I had so much to accomplish that I couldn't take time to pray.
Yeah.
And he goes on to talk about problems just tumbled about me, and heavier came each task. All these things. So what resonates with me is when I feel like that, you know, I am in an emotionally unhealthy spot, is I'm just reacting. And it could be something Angela says, it could be something on the group's team, it could be one of my leaders, it could be the car in front of me on Cooper. And usually those reactions are not biblically based in a way that makes me proud, or someone be proud of me, that kind of thing. Because it's off based. But it's decisions, how I make decisions. And versus, you know, I'm having to answer this or whatever the case may be, instead of pausing and praying through, God, what is your answer before I make that phone call or send that text or email? I just type it out real quick, send it, and move on to the next thing. And so you become very reactive versus proactive, which is a much better place because your conversations are deeper, whether it be with family, friends, whatever the case may be. You're more led by the Spirit because you're literally seeking God, as that little poem, because it continues, it goes on. And on the flip side, you know, it's woke up early this morning and did not rush into my day. I had so much to accomplish that I had to stop and pray. And so it's an attitude shift that takes place when we allow God to take a hold of, you know, our emotional well-being and the way that we engage the world around us.
Oh, that's so
that's good.
So good. Because to live reactively it's not a fun way to live, because usually you can tell how healthy you are when things don't go your way, or when you get bored. That will reveal in an instant if you're healthy or not.
That's good.
But when you look at our culture, the pace that we often live at is a sign that we're unwell. Mm-hmm. It's the only commandment, like, from God that we, like, celebrate, like, daily. Like, how are you doing? Like, oh, I'm busy, and it's great. Because it's the world that we live in. It's such a fast pace that is, I think, we're starting to see having an effect on our soul. But I also think of just lapse of your own spiritual practices, because you're just going to the next thing. Mm-hmm. What's the next on the schedule? I mean, the first thing to go all the time when you're unhealthy is your interaction with God, because he's always there. Yeah. He's going to forgive us anyways. I'm praying without ceasing. I'm doing finger quotes right now for those who are obviously
I
listening.
I appreciate them. I can
see thank
them.
You. Yeah. But we can sometimes use that. But then it's also, again, reflected in our relationships. When somebody's going through an issue, if our response is just to move them through it as quickly as possible or as practical as possible, hey, I'm anxious. Well, just pray about it. Just have more faith. Like, that's just bypassing what's actually going on to get to, I think, what Jesus is wanting to go after, the heart of saying, what is causing that anxiety?
Yeah.
And in my own story of anxiety and depression, like, having to come to grips that those in of themselves are not sinful. It's not a sin to be anxious or depressed.
Yeah.
But our reaction, our response to that, if we are just vegging out and not doing the hard work of examination with the Spirit in our life, that can and could be simple if you're coping in the wrong way.
Yeah.
But those are always invitations to find further intimacy with who God is.
Yeah.
I want to read a quote from John Ortberg as we move into just how can we find some opportunities to grow and to be emotionally healthy. Because I think oftentimes we look towards balance. He talks about that. We look in our modern world to try to find balance in our life and in our schedules. But he says, in our time, the greatest quest for a balanced lifestyle, ask most people in American society today what they're after, and they will say something about the need for balance. Even so, balance is not the holy grail. A balanced lifestyle is not an adequate goal to which to devote our lives to. The problem with that goal is that it's too difficult, but it's also too slight. The problem with the goal of balance is that it doesn't allow much for people in desperate situations, those in crisis or the poor or the oppressed. He continues to say, at a deeper level, the paradigm of balance simply doesn't capture the sense of compelling urgency worth of human devotion. It's a largely middle-class pursuit. It lacks a notion that my life is to be given to something bigger than myself. It lacks the call to sacrifice and self-denial, the wild, risky, costly, and adventurous abandonment of following Jesus. I think a lot of times we get, even in the church, we get sucked into that. We try to find balance in our life with Jesus, and we compartmentalize. But we see Jesus invite us to something that is a little bit more costly, a little bit more adventurous. As we follow Jesus, we see that he's obviously living at a different pace than most of us have ever lived. Why it's a different time, again, doing air quotes, I just imagine Jesus, when he finds out Lazarus is dying, he stays. He's like, I'm gonna wait 3 days. I mean, he could have just said Lazarus is not gonna die, and like Lazarus wouldn't have been fine. He could have left at that moment. But the pace of Jesus and the way he lived, going away to the silent places, I think he's inviting us into a way of life as well. So what is one thing that we can change in our lives to bring us to a place of greater emotional health, spiritual vitality, and in line with Jesus's vision for our life? What is one thing that, if we apply to our life, maybe start to practice this week, would bring a greater emotional health and spiritual vitality in our life?
Learning to say no. You know, you're talking about this overcommitted, extremely busy, stressed out lifestyle that most Americans embrace with some sort of, as a badge of honor or whatever the case is, and it's unhealthy. It produces mood swings and stress and all kinds of physical aspects. Stress is good, but being constantly overstressed is not. And so learning, this way I would approach the answer to that question. You need to find three to five things that are your top priority. Now, most people listening to this are going to throw God in there, family, career, whatever's in there. But you're gonna throw in several things that sound good on paper. But I would encourage, in this idea of learning how to say no, is what are the 3 to 5 top priorities in your life? Articulate it, write it down. And then take a look and examine your life. What are the top 3 to 5 things that you spend the majority of your time doing? And so the question is, do they align? You may say that God is first in your life, but how much time are you devoting to Him? You may say family or your wife, you know, whatever the case may be. This is very important to me, but yet you devote little time to it. So you begin to evaluate and examine really what your priorities are by what you're doing. And if you look at it and the to-do list is what's controlling you, apply that to your priorities. How does that fit in the priorities? And that's why I think, and I was having a conversation with a group leader the other day who is just stressed out. And I told him, you got to learn to say no.
Yeah.
God isn't calling you to do all these things.
Yeah.
And as he listed his priorities, those were the things that were suffering the most in order to accomplish these things. So short answer, learn to say no. Yeah. And if God's not, especially the things God's not calling you to do.
Yeah, Stan, I like that you said sometimes we make God the priority, say he's the priority, but when we, if we were to look at how much time we spend with him, he oftentimes he gets the lowest amount of time. Mm-hmm. So I always encourage people, like, do a time audit. Like, when you feel like you don't have time for things, it's never going to be made by you looking at what your life is. And I heard somebody say that we should consume more of the story of God than we consume of the story of the world.
Yeah.
And so that's good. Music and TV and news.
Social
we're consuming
media.
I mean, I think the average is maybe up to like 12 hours almost weekly of just that type of consumption. But as Gary, you
I thought you were going to say daily.
Daily. No, 12 hours daily. It might be for some people. Like
When you said weekly, I was like, that sounds low.
Yeah, it might be low. I didn't look it up until before we came in. But then you think about how much you engage the story of God. It might be a 30-minute drive to work. Yeah. You might listen to some worship music, 60 minutes on a Sunday, 60 minutes, and then 5 or 10 minutes maybe a morning. Like, it doesn't how much we're consuming the story of God, no wonder I think we're more anxious, because the story of the world is just so prevalent in our lives and compared to the story of God. So I loved that reminder, Stan, to say no. And if it's not getting the time, it's not getting your attention, it's not getting your focus, and that is the beginning of worship, is your attention and focus, then it's not really a priority, as you say. Your lived priority is something different. Gary, what about you? What is one thing that you can bring to greater health, spiritually and emotionally?
For me, it is, you said you learn to say no. For me, that the best definition for that is boundaries and your calendar. So for me, several years ago, I started with just some advice from some mentors and a book that I read. I really started leaning into controlling my calendar instead of my controller calendar, calendar controlling me, right? And so I went into my calendar, and it's still there today. Evenings, Friday is, as our staff, we have Fridays as a day off. And I just put in there family time, just a block of time for family time, and time where I'm not going to schedule anything. Because essentially what we end up doing, and not just with meetings and work stuff, but even our personal life with sports and, you know, commitments to help and do different, all these different things. If our calendar fills up and then we're trying to fit in family time and then we're trying to fit in, that's backwards. You've got to have some healthy blocks of time for family time, for spiritual development, already scheduled in that you're not gonna schedule over. And it's a commitment, and it takes a commitment to do that. It's setting boundaries, and it's kind of learning that you don't have to even have a reason. You don't have to tell somebody, well, you don't have to make something. No, I'm not gonna do that. We've just got this thing we're doing. We're busy. You can just say no, right? Yeah. It's really hard for people. But there's power in the simplicity of the truth of just saying, you know, I appreciate the invite, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's almost impossible for probably 80% of the world.
Because you said yes to something that's important to you, to a priority. So to say, hey,
exactly
no,
right.
I'm not able to do that or participate in that because I said yes to,
that's exactly
this is a time
right.
for my family.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that's exactly
so
right.
Important.
So learning to calendar and, you know, not let, so somebody used the analogy that, most of the time we calendar backwards, and it's like the tail wagging the dog,
right?
Instead of the dog wagging the tail. Like, it's just that idea of it gets overfilled, and that's gonna wear you down emotionally. Every time.
It will.
A lot of people will say, well, I can't do that. I can't change because of my demands at work or my demands, you know, with the kids and soccer and whatever. You know, we fill up our calendar with a variety of things, but what I take away from what Gary just said was – it has to be a proactive priority that you make. And so if you, okay, you unwind whatever, how tight you're wound at this point, but you realistically begin taking steps towards freeing up the calendar, setting designated times for specific purposes. Feeding the soul is very important in the life of a follower of Christ. We have to do that. And those are, you begin taking steps. Doesn't mean you're where you want to be tomorrow, but if you can start making positive steps towards that, then like what Gary said, I really feel like you can control that as far as time slots on the calendar.
The other practical thing I do outside of just my calendar is downtime on my phone. Mm-hmm. And it's literally on Do Not Disturb from 9 p.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Or if there's another time that's important or another time that I don't want to be disturbed, I turn on the Do Not Disturb.
Yeah.
And that's hard for other people too. People who feel like they need your attention or they need that time from you. But the reality is you'll be much healthier emotionally and spiritually when you set those boundaries. And there are physical things that can help us do that. Yeah. Real practical is just a Do Not Disturb on your phone.
Yeah, I think I live with focus mode on my phone. So it's set to like, I have a work mode. I have at a certain time in the evening it goes on. So it's really only family and my community that can get a hold of me.
Yep, that's important.
But it's like what you're saying no because you said yes to other things.
And not that you won't get notifications. You can still go check it in your time. And there, you have to have those boundaries too.
And if it's an emergency, you can like press, hey, slam it, hey.
Right.
Or call multiple times.
Right.
But, I mean, it's probably a bigger conversation than we have because it goes back to the purpose of life for us. If our purpose of life is just of pleasure, then living by the calendar and saying no to things is you're taking away, like, that's sinful to me that you're taking away my enjoyment of different things, which is, I think, not the way of the kingdom. Is not Jesus' plan for your life is not just your enjoyment of pleasure, but it's for abundant in life. Flourishing.
Right.
And so for me, I'm the same with you. Calendar is so important to me. Mm-hmm. If I plan weekly and I just always move over my time with God as the most important things. And I schedule opportunities of rest because I think sometimes we look just towards vacation. Why am I doing air quotes?
We look I'm enjoying it.
We look just towards like times of vacation and time off as opportunities of rest. But having moments daily where you disconnect from your phone for an hour and just be present. Mm-hmm. Weekly, so I'm the same way from like Friday evening to like Saturday. I am unreachable unless it's like an emergency because it's restful for my soul just to engage and enjoy God. And I can be the best pastor and leader when I have time just to rest as well. And that's first and foremost what we're called to do. I love Jeremiah, I believe it's 16:6. It says, when you don't know where to go, stand at the crossroad and look for the old godly ways. Mm-hmm. There you'll find rest for your souls because the kingdom is about rest and emotional and spiritual and relational health. And so I appreciate both of your insights into this and that we're to be people of intimacy first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And when the power of no in our life is such a good reminder, even as leaders, to say, hey, I can't do that because I said yes to these things. So if you can encourage just in a few sentences our leaders about the importance of this, what would be your final encouragement to our leaders today?
I would just say, first of all, don't give up. I mean, there's going to be times when you do feel like you want to email or text your group's pastor and say, hey, I'm done. And that may be a sign that you need some help, but maybe it's not always a sign you need to stop.
Yeah.
Right. And so, use your resources, reach out to the people that are closest to you, your group's pastor, certainly if you're feeling worn out, but your family, make sure that you have the people in your life that can help speak truth in those areas.
Yeah.
And so, and then, be spiritually grounded yourself so that you can lead other people. You can't pour into others when you're empty. And I mean, we hear that all the time. It's such a deep truth though.
Yeah.
You can't pour into others when you're empty. And so make sure that you're taking care of your own emotional health, and that means also taking care of your own spiritual health.
Yeah, spiritual health just goes into it. So it's so prevalent in all aspects of our lives. And I think if I could sum up this conversation, it'd go this way. You know, there's so much in the Bible that talks about how to have a relationship with God that is transformational. And, you know, when you look at Scripture, it talks about things like fixing our eyes or our gaze upon Jesus. And this is just simply engaging Him daily through Scripture, prayer, godly relationships, that kind of thing. but it's also setting our mind on things above, because when we allow the word and others that are of godly influence, mentors, things like that, to really infect, I'll use that word, the way that we think, it changes our priorities. It guides our priorities. Yeah. It guides our boundaries, our no's, and all the things that we've been discussing. Scripture talks about storing up treasures and having taken up your cross daily. These are principles that are there for a healthy relationship with God. And I guess I'm advocating, if your relationship with God is healthy, your relationship with yourself and others will be healthy as well, because, again, it goes back to the overflow.
Yeah.
Everything centers around a relationship with God, and if we're putting Him on the back burner because of lack of boundaries or overstressed or a long list on our to-dos, we will suffer because of that. And I have experienced some very difficult times, and when I seek God and ask Him to step into those times, I just have a different perspective.
Yeah.
And how else can some of the other great men and women that we read their stories of martyrdom experience some of the things that they experienced, other than this mindset of fixing their gaze on the Lord?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, that's just one of the big keys that I think we overlook. We want to read the latest book, or we want to listen to the latest podcast, but in essence, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
A relationship with God is going to manifest itself in so many aspects of our lives.
Yeah. That's such a good reminder. You know, a great way to end is, it might not be another new, more information that we need, but to trust what we already know, which is John 15, abide in me, because I am the vine, you're the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them will produce much fruit, for apart from me, you can do nothing.
That's right.
Emotional and spiritual health comes from abiding. Yeah. And the best way to abide is to say no. It's to know your calendar. And so in the show notes, we're going to put some resources to help you, and some books and some recommendations to help you take control of your calendar and to start to live more actively and not just reactively. With Stan and Gary, I appreciate both of y'all, the meaningful love that y'all have for me in my life, and just thank y'all for coming on and sharing with us today how to be emotionally healthy leaders.
I appreciate y'all. This is great. Yeah.